I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times. The Small Business Administration ran out of money last Thursday, 2 weeks after receiving $349 billion to help shore up small businesses forced to close because of the pandemic. The Paycheck Protection Program rewards employers with less than 500 employees for retaining their workers instead of laying them off. The money was quickly dispersed, and it turns out that some big chains got to the front of the line, leaving many moms and pops empty-handed. Now Congress and the White House are negotiating a second relief package worth something like $470 billion. We asked Jim Saxo to join us. He's financial services reporter for CQ Roll Call and a WHYY alum. Jim Saxo, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Hey, Marty. Thanks for having me. It's great to be back.
Nice to have you back with us. What's the status of the current negotiations between the House, the Senate, and the White House?
Well, that is fast moving. Chuck Schumer just announced earlier on CNN this morning that they've reached a deal, and the deal is bigger than what they were looking at before. They're talking about adding another $250 million to this program. Now they're talking about another $300 million for the program, plus another $125 billion. I'm sorry, I keep saying million.
It's a billion, right?
We're talking about billions here, yeah. Plus another $125 billion that will be earmarked for underbanked or unbanked communities. So we're talking rural areas and also a lot of, like, urban areas and communities that don't have relationships with traditional lenders. You see that in Philadelphia a lot,
sure,
where CDFIs, community development, financial institutions work with minority-owned businesses very often that may not have the credit history to get a loan from a regular bank.
When this was passed, what was that, several weeks ago, and the money was quickly spent after 2 weeks, did anyone expect that $340 billion, again, billion, was going to be enough to help small businesses?
You know, it's kind of funny. You know, and I've spoken to Senator Marco Rubio, who's the architect of this, and, you know, he just said, you know, we didn't expect the money to move this quickly, and also thought that Congress would have enough time to get back to legislate on it. Now, that was during a murky time in late March where we really didn't have the full shutdowns and social distancing orders that we see now. But that being said, at the time, there were a few economists that were out there saying this probably has to be closer to $600 billion altogether. And this morning, we're seeing some banks and banking groups say, given the demand that we're seeing, we think, you know, they need to add a trillion to the existing program. And to put
wow.
that in context, the 2009 fiscal stimulus bill was only $830 billion. So we're talking about something that is bigger than that alone, and we're ignoring all of the other programs like the checks to individuals and the increased unemployment benefits.
I was reading, and perhaps this is all going to change very quickly, but 1,637,000 small businesses applied for this Paycheck Protection Program. Something like 65% of small businesses applied. Assuming that's correct, what does that tell us, Jim?
Well, it tells us a couple of things. One is that there's incredible need for this. This, you know, estimates vary, and we won't know for a while, if ever. But we're looking at like a third of businesses being completely shut down because of this. Either they're a store or a restaurant that just cannot open, or they're completely dependent on a store or restaurant that can't open. And so there's just no money coming in. On top of that, everyone else, there are these ancillary impacts. If you depend on advertising dollars, advertisers have just stopped because people are hoarding money right now to be able to make it through this crisis. The other big thing, though, when we talk about 65% of businesses, I've also seen surveys that say as much as 75%.
Wow.
When you look at how many people have gotten those loans, the National Federation for Independent Businesses put out a survey just yesterday that estimated that only 20% of those that applied have gotten funding so far. So there's still huge, huge demand. When I've talked to community banks, the estimates vary, but, some said, only 15% of the loans that we applied for have been approved by the SBA in this program. So there's still a lot of struggling businesses out there that are desperate for this money to stay afloat.
Absolutely. Is this because of technical problems or that it's just really hard to spend $349 billion in the course of several weeks? What's the holdup?
But I don't think there's much holdup in the SBA getting the money out. It's that the demand is that much bigger than the $350 billion. That's what it boils down to. When you talk about small businesses, they employ a little bit under half of all Americans. So what this program is supposed to do is cover your payroll for about 8 weeks for half of the economy, or at least half of employees. And that's just a huge amount of money that needs to get out. I think the SBA has ramped up its program admirably and quickly. They put out 14 times what they normally put out in a year in 13 days. So that's kind of incredible. And the number of banks that have worked and other lenders that have worked in this program is now up over 4,500, which is more than double the number of lenders that usually work for the SBA. So there were a bunch of hiccups and a lot of complaints about who's gotten some of this money, but it really just is a demand and supply issue.
One of the complaints is that some big chains were able to get money, and I don't know whether it was just they know how to work the system because they're big chains and they've got lawyers and people that know how the system works, and whether that ended up hurting some of these moms and pops. And I know that Shake Shack got something like $10 million, and there was such an outcry, they gave it back. But what does this reveal?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it. A lot of the bigger businesses that can qualify for this, and it should be clear, get a little bit in the weeds for a sec. A small business is generally defined as someone that employs 500 people or less. They loosen those rules to help out some restaurant and hotel groups. And the idea is, like, if you own, a small chain of restaurants, maybe like 10, it's likely that, you have more than 500 employees. But what ends up happening is that a lot of these much larger chains like Shake Shack or Ruth's Chris or Fogo de Chow, they apply, even though they employ, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 employees and got these loans. In fact, there's been some analysis by the Wall Street Journal and the Financial Times this morning that counted 80 more than 80 publicly traded companies were able to get this money using the sort of loopholes that they put in this bill, in part because the idea was to get the money out quick. And so there's this conflict when you're moving this quickly between moving fast and being precise. And because they'd said move fast, a lot of companies that could have relied on some of the other programs that have been set up, like lending facilities through the Federal Reserve Bank that offer low interest loans to bigger companies. That's aimed at the quote unquote mid-size section of the economy. A lot of those companies were able to take advantage of these really, favorable loan terms, basically, and get what might, what is essentially a grant.
It sounds like, based on what Senator Schumer said, that this money that's being negotiated now will at least make an attempt to fix that so that the money really does go to those sole proprietors who are in such deep trouble.
Yeah, I think that's what the $125 billion that he talked about is really focused on. There's a concern early on that this would be a problem. And, like, another issue here is that the bigger companies – they have accountants, they have automated payrolls, they have lawyers. they were able to apply earlier. That much we know. They also had relationships with more lenders than your mom and pop. With a lot of small businesses, they might at most have had a relationship with just one bank. And if that bank wasn't already an SBA lender or didn't get into the SBA lending program quickly, they had to wait. And because the money wasn't enough at the start, money ran out faster. So those that had that systemic advantage or just the luck of having a bank that already was approved with the SBA, they were able to get in a lot quicker.
I'm curious about even just looking ahead. So when do you expect Congress and the White House will sign off on this next pile of money going out to small businesses?
Yeah, so if what Schumer said this morning holds true, we expect the Senate to vote on it this afternoon, and then the House will come back Thursday. Now, that could get a little interesting like it did last time, given that they'll try to move this through some sort of unanimous consent or voice vote. But we might have a situation where we're going to need to get a quorum because some representatives, like Thomas Massey of Kentucky, who's like a true dyed-in-the-wool libertarian, will want there to be a quorum vote there and will force the issue. But once that gets through, we expect it to be signed by the president later that day on Thursday. The other complicating issue is that some of the progressives in the Democratic Party are saying that this bill might not be enough. I haven't been able to speak to any of them or see what they've said since Schumer announced what he did this morning just before we came on. But that could also be a complicating issue. But that being said, I think the expectation is this gets signed Thursday and the program starts up again Friday.
The Representative Matsui, he earned no friends on either side of the aisle, did he, when he basically tried to force Congress, the House, back to work?
Yeah, he's a bit of a gadfly. Really took the brunt of the ire. But, you know, I think to be fair to him, he has a point. The Constitution does require the representatives to vote. It doesn't say where they have to. And leadership on both sides, McConnell and Pelosi, the Speaker of the House and the Majority Leader, they've essentially decided that they're not going to entertain too much of the idea of remote voting. The House is going to look into allowing proxy votes on the floor, which will help alleviate the need for everyone to be back. But there's still going to need to be people back, to deliver those proxy votes. But there really seems to be this by refusing to do remote voting, leadership basically gets to run the show. This
and Jim, I gotta interrupt you here because they're playing my song. Thank you so much for joining us, Jim Saxa, financial services reporter for CQ Roll Call. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. As you know, the coronavirus has wreaked havoc on the U.S. economy, forcing the closure of businesses across the country and leading to 22 million filing for unemployment benefits in the last month. Until there is adequate and accurate testing, there is no safe way to reopen the country and get everyone back to work. So what should be done in the interim? What will it take for people hit hard by the shutdown to both survive and hopefully recover? And is this a wake-up call about how to rethink and reform how we work in this country? And we have two guests who have joined us. Carl Van Horn is Distinguished Professor of Public Policy at the Edward J. Blaustein School of Planning and Public Policy at Rutgers University, where he's founding director of the John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development. Carl, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me, Marty. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. And Mahona Siddiq joins us. She's project manager at the Economy League of Greater Philadelphia, where she runs the organization's civic consulting practice. She's the primary author of the LenFest North Philadelphia Workforce Initiative Strategic Plan. And she had a commentary on Billy Penn that was posted earlier this week or in the last couple of days, and we wanted to get her on Radio Times. And Mahona Siddiq, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines are always open. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can send us a Facebook page, and we will make sure your comments get on the air. Mahona, let me begin with you. And Philadelphia, even under the best of circumstances, struggles because of our high poverty rate. How has this city been hurt by, and especially the many low-income people living and working in the city, how has that the city been hit by this pandemic?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I think COVID-19 has really sort of illuminated who works and who stays home and what jobs are essential during this time. And at the community level, this is felt kind of disparately throughout Philadelphia. And I'm going to draw sort of from North Philadelphia as an example, because that's where our strategic plan was written. You know, North Philadelphia is a mostly Black community. It's about 48% Black and ethnically about a third Latino. And even before the pandemic, 43% of the labor force was participating. So that's fairly low. That's much lower than Philadelphia's 54%. And there are major barriers to begin with. But what the pandemic has sort of illuminated is that most of these Black and Latino workers are sort of on the front lines of the pandemic, either from a health perspective or from a workforce perspective. So for those folks who are working, 19% of them are in healthcare and 5% of them are in transportation. So that's right at the front line, right, being very much put at risk.
And
sorry, go
so, ahead. No. And I do want to get to Carl, but just to follow up on that, Mahona, so that means that either they are working during the pandemic and there are risks obviously associated with that, or they've been hit hard by the pandemic, because if you're working in retail and other related industries, a lot of stores are shut down.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, the other folks that are working in retail or food services, and both of those industries have been sort of totally upended and turned on their heads. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence kind of emerging that those industries have very uncertain futures right now. So, for example, more than 8 in 10 restaurant workers have been laid off or furloughed in Pennsylvania right now. So, you know, it's a pretty dire situation, and it's kind of geographically predictable.
Carl, let me get you in on the conversation. I want to focus on New Jersey, which has been really hurt hard by this COVID-19, the second highest number of positive tests and deaths after New York. And 718,000 New Jerseyans have applied for unemployment. Help us understand what's happening over in the Garden State.
Yes, thank you. Yes, New Jersey has been hit hard. You know, our state is like, you know, not dissimilar from eastern Pennsylvania. It has, you know, a lot of density, a lot of workers in healthcare, and, you know, so we are struggling. The unemployment numbers are just staggering. I mean, it's probably close to 20% at this point. Pennsylvania is probably a little higher than that, actually, would be our estimates. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, is as sudden a shock that the U.S. economy has ever had. There's never been anything like this. So a lot of times, as an historian, of course, of economic policy, I often say things are precedented, meaning it's happened before.
Yeah.
But this is unprecedented, and there's no changing that. We've never experienced anything like this as quickly or as sharp a decline.
And you mentioned the depression, but this is really a virus, a public health crisis that has shut down the economy. Is that what makes this unprecedented?
Well, that and the speed of it. So if you think of 9/11, for example, where we had a catastrophic terrorist attack in a section of the country, which shut down this region for a period of time, it didn't affect the rest of the country. And returning to work after those horrible days was possible for many people, if not most people. This, on the other hand, is extremely different because, as you pointed out before, you can't return to work safely until we understand who is spreading the disease and how to avoid getting it. It's very lethal. It transmits very easily. And we clearly don't have the testing or the protective equipment mm-hmm. for people to wear to make sure that they're going to be safe at work.
Mahona, let me go back to you. I'm thinking of people living in, let's say, North Philadelphia, where you do a lot of your work. Let's say they are out of a job. How are they going to survive based on what Carl just said, which is we really don't know how this is going to end or come to an end?
Such a good point. I mean, it's a really a frightening situation, but there are a lot of really great resources that folks are putting together. There's a very, very robust sort of network of workforce development organizations in Philadelphia and particularly in North Philadelphia. So there are a lot of resources that people can turn to now and also from sort of a benefits perspective, drawing from sort of state funds right now that is reaching out to a lot of different kinds of workers.
And Carl, let me go back to you. And I know from an interview you did recently that for those people who are laid off because of the pandemic, there are things that you may not get your job back, but there are things that you can do to at least stay connected to the workforce. What are they?
Well, let me just echo the point that Mahona made about benefits before I get into that quickly. And that is that there are larger benefits available this time than ever before through the unemployment insurance system. And it is, for many people, a great struggle to get those benefits because of the enormous pressure on the staffs and the computer systems, often that are quite ancient in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. Yeah. But they have to keep trying because even if they don't get the benefits right away, if they register the day they registered for that, they will eventually get those payments. So it's very important to do that. We know from past economic crises, a lot of these benefits are never received by people because they don't know about them. So take advantage of local resources, your friends and neighbors, anywhere you can get advice, and, of course, deal with the government agency. So that's very important. But other than that, you know, I think the most important thing is to stay active as best you can. Look at the job opportunities that may be available. In New Jersey, for example, there are over 50,000 jobs posted right now. Most of them are in transportation, logistics, healthcare, and so on. But a lot of those jobs require absolutely no previous experience, right? Wow. Which means, and they're paying more than the minimum wage in New Jersey, well more than that. Now, as we've pointed out, some of these jobs may put you at risk, so you have to make sure that you have proper personal protective equipment with that company that is talking, giving you that opportunity. But there are definitely those types of jobs. And for folks who think that this is going to come back right away, and that's in the minds of some people, I've seen some polls suggest we're going to snap back. My advice is don't have that mindset. You need to think about this as a 2 to 3 year period of recovery. It won't all happen at once. It will happen gradually. And so you need to be thinking, okay, beyond the benefits, how can I earn money in a safe way to continue to feed myself and my family?
So take that. Don't hold out for the job that you just lost, but take that job that looks like it's something you could do.
Yes, because some of those jobs will obviously shrink. So if you're going to do delivery work, maybe that will decline, although that could continue for some period of time because people will adjust their consumption habits. They're maybe less likely to go to a retail store. What happens to places like Macy's and strip malls that have lots of these retail stores? People may decide for a long period of time they don't want to do that anymore. They just want to order online or through a phone call and have it delivered to their apartment or their house. So you need to begin to pivot and think about, well, what is available? And rather than try to predict it, you know, go for the jobs that are actually being listed today.
And that's Rutgers University's Carl Van Horn, also with us, Mahona Sadiq from the Economy League of Greater Philadelphia. And we are talking about how the pandemic has really upended so much of the economy. But there are things that you can do and things, options that might be out there that you don't know about. And also ways to maybe rethink or even reform how we do work in this country. And I do want to get to that. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. WHYY.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Mahono, I just want to give you a chance to respond to what Carl just said. Basically, he's saying in New Jersey there's something like 50,000 jobs that are available. How about for Philadelphia?
Yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, we're seeing sort of this this boom in jobs in retail, food-related retail in particular. You know, again, echoing Dr. Van Horn's comment that, you know, a lot of these jobs sort of don't require some previous experience. So it is an opportunity, but, you know, for folks out there who are looking, just being mindful that they are, you know, there is a risk associated with it.
Let me read an email from Richard, who's actually, this is related to what I was talking with Jim Sachs about, and this is the Paycheck Protection Program, talking about the fact that it's taxpayers' money, which is true. Demand that the money be vetted appropriately and not going to chains. Carl, I don't know if you were following this at all, but some of this Paycheck Protection money out of the first 300 some billion dollars spent did go to chains that had more than 500 people when you add them all up. But a job is a job is a job is a job. I'm just curious about your thoughts about that.
Yes, I did. I did listen to part of that, and I've read about that. You know, my view is that it doesn't matter who your employer is. If you're out of work, and especially if you're a low, moderate income worker, it doesn't matter whether it's a chain or a small restaurant. It's a job, and it's an opportunity to help that person survive. The other point I make is that there's no question that when you put this much money through the any process, certainly a government, but even a private sector processing routine, there are going to be problems, right? Mm-hmm. It's very hard to spend this much money quickly without making some mistakes, and there will be mistakes, and the reckoning will happen, I'm sure, over time. But I have some sympathy with the people in the government who are trying to do this, because it's just very difficult. The fact that they pushed out a lot of this very quickly is a good thing, because it will create job opportunities for many people as well, and it also will help them maintain their house, their apartment, and bring essential food and other things into their home.
Mona, let me go back to you. And again, we're focusing on North Philadelphia, but I think it applies to a lot of the city and the region as well. Thinking about these moms and pops, these small businesses, these sole proprietors, and how to kind of stand in line to get what is owed. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions for those people?
Yeah, well, I definitely think that the small business perspective is going to be incredibly important. And, you know, on the lines of what the commenter sort of wrote in, right now a job is a job is a job. Mm-hmm. But we really are at a point where we can sort of think a little bit bigger. Right now we're sort of at a point where we're stemming the bleeding. And, you know, there are a lot of people who are hurting. But there is an opportunity here to think about, well, why don't we make a job a career? And why don't we connect more people to sustainable employment? Because I think there's an opportunity for that.
Here's an email from Virginia. I'm going to try to condense it. My husband is a granite fabrication company in New Jersey, less than 100 employees, an existing relationship with the bank. Applied for the loan program day one, staying open with skeletal crew, nothing so far from the bank, yet promissory note came through signed, no money yet. And she goes on from there, ending by saying, you know, for a lot of small businesses, 1 week is a long time. It's hard, Carl, to wait for money, knowing that so many small businesses don't have a lot of you know, cash waiting to be, you know, gotten out of the sock drawer.
No, there's no question about that. I mean, what will happen is these businesses that are, you know, had minimal reserves, did not have, you know, a good credit with their bank, are probably going to go out of business. And that's extremely unfortunate. Yeah. And how to help them over the long run is obviously going to be a priority, because, again, remember, about half of the population works for these businesses that earn less, that have less than 500 employees. So that is a huge part of the economy. They're not all going to fail. Some of them will come back. But in an economic catastrophe, they are one of the victims, you know, as well as the workers. And you know, building that back, as I suggested before, is not a quick snapback. It's a long road. Remember, the recession, the Great Recession recovery, took over 10 years. And in the last 8 weeks, we've lost every single job created since the Great Recession recovery. You know, that whole period wiped out in 8 weeks. So, you know, 22 million jobs. So you can't overestimate the depth of the problem. What we need to do is figure out over a period of time how to recover from it. And right now, as Mohan said, we are in the short-term emergency phase, and this is going to take many, many years and other interventions of additional support from the federal government for us to eventually recover.
Mohan, we're up in a break here, but I'm thinking not only do small businesses hire, you know, almost half the country, they also make a community unique because of how personal they are and how they don't look like a chain.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, here in Philadelphia, we have, you know, a huge number of small businesses, you know, almost upwards of 99% of businesses in Philadelphia are small. And, you know, we know that most of those organizations have very little cash on hand. So it's an opportunity to really support small businesses that drive our region's economy.
And thinking of those main streets, wherever they are, you know, without these one-of-a-kind stores is really worrisome.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, many of these small businesses are owned by business owners of color. So, yeah. You know, we have an opportunity here.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Mohana Siddiq and Carl Van Horn. And with you, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. And do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with our guests about what government has been doing and can be doing to help workers who have been hit hard by this pandemic and small businesses as well. And we do want to talk about what an economic recovery would look like following the fallout of the pandemic and some of these distancing measures. And again, Carl Van Horn is a professor of public policy at Rutgers University, founding director of the John J. Heldrick Center for Workforce Development. Mohana Siddiq is project manager at the Economy League of Greater Philadelphia. She runs the organization's civic consulting practice. Mohana, let me go back to you, and actually going back to this Billy Penn article that you wrote that was one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show, is it is an opportunity, even though it feels like we're so deep into this crisis, to think about what kind of country we want to be, what kind of economy we want to be, what we want work to look like. And I wonder, you know, sort of based on the work that you've been doing in North Philadelphia, what are some of the opportunities here, assuming we can do something to address some of these systemic problems?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think my colleague Mike Shield sort of put this best, and that is this pandemic is not colorblind, so our solutions shouldn't be either. And, you know, we have an opportunity to sort of think about what works when we connect people to work. And what we know about that is there are a few really good best practices out there, and that is when employers are engaged, when there's a robust community process that really brings in the community, when there's sharing of resources and information, when people have opportunities to advance or career pathways, and when folks' access to basic needs and services are met, so things like childcare, transportation. And you know, again, when we get to a point where we've sort of stopped the bleeding and moved away from this sort of emergency crisis response and to a point where we can think about reform and recovery, these sort of five best practices of workforce development can help us shape what we want sort of the future of work to look like.
Do you think we'll do that?
I certainly hope so.
I mean, it's hard to predict the future. And I think, again, there's so much focus on just getting through this crisis. But I wanted to, Carl, I mean, looking ahead, I guess it is an opportunity to rethink how we pay people, who gets, you know, who is considered essential. What should a job include in terms of things like benefits? I wonder if you could speak to that.
Sure. I think that, remind your listeners that there's an election this fall. Sure. And I think that at the federal congressional Senate races and in the presidential election, you know, this will certainly be an issue, not only the looking backward, but looking forward, because all elections are about the future, essentially. And you're going to hear the candidates talk about this. There will be different narratives, proposals from the presumed nominees, and they're going to present different visions. And, you know, the way that turns out and how the eventual, you know, members of Congress get elected and how they think they should behave in the future will determine whether this is more than previous recessions, you know. And already there's been a number of unprecedented investments made by federal lawmakers. Now, will that continue? Will they change the way they approach that in the long run? It's very hard to predict at this point.
Yeah. We've talked about this several times on Radio Times. So, Carl, let me toss this back to you. Looking at a country like Germany, and apparently they did this during the recession of 10 years ago, largely keeping workforce employed, the government pays most of the salary so that when the recession slash depression is over, it's easier to restart their economy. Does that seem like a smart thing to do?
It does, and it's never been in our playbook. So
no.
It's one of those, you know, when you look at those countries, by the way, Germany also had very widespread testing and contact tracing of people who were infected, which made it more possible for them to recover. So in a sense, one can say, okay, we missed that, so now what do we have to do? So I think there's, like many things that happen in the European social model and social compact, I really find it unlikely that it's going to come to this country. It's not that we haven't known about this. It's not that there haven't people advocated for it in the past. What we tend to do in this country is, when we have an emergency, is we make some substantial but really incremental changes. And thus far, the response has not been incremental. It's been quite substantial from the federal government. But then the future is, well, then to what extent does that become a one-off, or is that a right pattern for the future? And my crystal ball on that is cloudy. I really can't tell you whether it's going to be a long-term change or it's just a one-time emergency response.
And Mahona, just picking up what you said earlier and what Carl just said, is how this virus has exposed so many problems in our country, including our economy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's really kind of illuminated, you know, the fact that so many folks are living paycheck to paycheck. It's illuminated, you know, facts about sort of the nature of work and what jobs are essential. And, you know, I consider this sort of an opportunity to rethink. And I certainly hope that our leaders will do the same.
And rethink that just we need to sort of rethink how we value work and whose work we value.
Exactly. This is an opportunity for greater equity, I believe. And, you know, I certainly hope that we don't waste that opportunity.
Let me read some more comments. One from PJ says, my son's employer, a bona fide small business, received a PPP loan, and now my son is upset that he'll be paid less than the unemployment compensation he's currently collecting from the state and federal governments. And I wonder, Carl, if you could take that. And I think in New Jersey, it's, I would say, probably more generous than a lot of states. And then when you throw in the federal government, which is, I think, supposed to give people something like $600 a week, could that be, especially for a low-paying job, you would actually end up getting more from these benefits, these unemployment benefits, than you would from your actual employer?
Yes, that is absolutely true. And, you know, a person who's entitled to that has to make a choice for themselves as to how they want to go. It may mean, however, if they take that unemployment insurance when the business reopens, they don't immediately get called back. The people that you know, those who were stayed with the company are more likely to be rehired. So that's a choice you have to make. And I think it depends on your financial needs, where you would come down on that. In other words, stay with the company, earn somewhat less, or go out on unemployment insurance.
And I don't know whether these are unusual times. So let's say being on unemployment, let's say 6 months, hopefully not as long as that, Carl. The longer you're on unemployment, is that still looked at by employers as a problem?
It's a risk you take because employers, we know from past studies that we've done and others, there's a stigma attached to long-term unemployment unfairly, like many stigmas. And so they say, well, if they were out of work, perhaps that suggests they're not as going to be as a productive worker. There may be some hidden problem that it's not obvious to me. And so they may not be the first person hired. So it's something one needs to think about. I always say it's better to remain active if you can. And I do want to point out as well that in addition to the jobs I mentioned that are available in New Jersey, and I'm sure in Pennsylvania, there are also many volunteer opportunities available for people who, especially those who have somewhat more advantage that can spend the time to help people. We need folks to deliver meals to low-income people, the elderly people that are shut in. These aren't dangerous jobs, but they are jobs that need to be done in your local community. And you can find those opportunities on the New Jersey COVID-19 website, which I encourage your listeners to go to. And it's a way to give back, but it's also a way to keep yourself active. It's good, I think, for most people's mindset that they're helping others during this period of time. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a fortunate position, I urge you to try to do something to help your fellow residents.
Yeah, absolutely. Mahoney, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely a lot of opportunities to help fellow residents. And, you know, I want to get back to Dr. Van Horn's point about, the sort of stigma that's attached to long-term employment. That is something that we've seen in many communities, particularly communities of color. In North Philadelphia, there are a lot of folks who are returning citizens, for example, who have major gaps on their resume because they were incarcerated. So, you know, that is a very real sort of workforce barrier. And I think, you know, connecting to resources that can sort of show continued activity in the workforce will be valuable to people right now.
Let me read a couple of more emails. Mahone, I'll put this to you. This is from Diane. She says, why am I not hearing more that the rich should contribute more through imposed taxes? No, instead, the poor and the struggling have to look for jobs that pay more than the minimum wage. What is the minimum wage now? $7.75. Diane, obviously talking about some of the inequities that have been revealed. Anything you want to say, Mahone, back to her?
Yes, again, you know, this is really an opportunity to, you know, this pandemic has revealed that so many folks, again, are living paycheck to paycheck. There are major gaps in our workforce ecosystem, and it's an opportunity to rethink what it means, what a living wage means, and what sort of a sustainable employment looks like in this country. So reevaluating both wages and the safety nets that exist for workers is hugely important right now.
Carl, here's an email from Linda. Should all businesses, all industries, and all industry players be bailed out? Should some industries like cruises and airlines and oil be allowed to be winnowed out by the free market forces? Won't stronger, better suited players take their place if we truly are following free market principles? And I guess what Linda's saying is under these circumstances, you know, the fittest survives.
Well, I guess I'd point out that most of us, when we think about the economy, all major economies are managed economies. They're not true free markets because there's all sorts of benefits and subsidies to go to one company or another for various reasons. For example, there was money in one of the first rounds of stimulus to support the development of vaccines. Huge amounts of money went into that. I don't think many people would say that's not a good investment, but it's something that in order to accelerate it, the federal government decided to put money into that. Cruise ships, on the other hand, might be the other end of the spectrum. I'm not sure that they're an essential service. Not being a person who's taken a cruise myself, perhaps that's a little unfair, but you know, I doubt that is something that the government should spend a lot of time subsidizing. Airlines, on the other hand, is a different matter. Remember, partly what airlines do is they create a global commerce. They bring talent back and forth. They allow us to import goods from other countries and sell our goods to other places. The airline industry is definitely going to be hurt. It won't be the same as it was before the pandemic, but the idea of providing some assistance to maintain a core service in the airline industry, I think, is important, and in all transportation. So, again, you have to take this on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, policymakers are making choices about winners and losers. And again, in the reckoning, we'll go back and look at this and say were those good choices or not.
Mahona, here's a Facebook message from Tim who says, for me, the biggest takeaway is that it doesn't make sense for health coverage to be tied to employment. All these people have lost their jobs, have also lost their health care. That's a whole large topic, which we'll probably get to sometime later on in the months ahead. But I'd just be curious about your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I mean, again, this goes back to thinking about how we work and the safety nets that exist for workers. And right now, a lot of benefits, like health benefits, are tied to work, which, again, as we think about reform, it's perhaps an opportunity to revisit how that happens.
Carl, do you see it that way?
I do think that that's a place where there perhaps is the greatest opportunity to build more support for fundamental healthcare services, as well as the economic floor, as you alluded to before, the minimum wage, which is rising in a number of states, but it has not become federal law. So I think there is a potential opportunity for that, especially insofar as people get a better grasp on the fact that the folks that they depend upon to, provide groceries to them actually are essential. They're essential. Now, I'm not sure everybody didn't understand that, but I think a lot more people do understand that now. So I think there is some opportunity both in the healthcare and in the financial wage space. But as I said before, that's what elections are about. And so we'll see how that turns out not too long from now as to whether that becomes a new policy direction or whether we go back to the status quo of, marginal incremental changes and the innovations happening at the state level.
Carl, just a quick question before we have to say goodbye. Thinking about New Jersey's beaches and the state depends on tourism for so much of its dollars. How critical is that to the state's recovery?
Well, of course, it's critical. It's critical to the state. It's by the way, having been on the beaches many times, there's lots of folks from the Philadelphia area there as well enjoying the New Jersey shore.
Yes, we do.
And the casino industry and so on. It is important. And again, these are the tough decisions that have to be made. Because if you're on the beach on July 4th in Point Pleasant, mm-hmm. there's no such thing as social distancing. Mm-hmm. So there's going to have to be some changes, I think, in the short run in how we can enjoy the outdoors.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Carl Van Horn from Rutgers University, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Mahona Siddiq, Project Manager at the Economy League of Greater Philadelphia. Mahona, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're very welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. Also, how to download a podcast of the show. You can get a podcast of Radio Times where you get your other podcasts. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.